You are listening to a divine service.
Or a lecture.
Or a sermon.
Or a performance.
Or a podcast.
Or something else.
From St. Vladimir Orthodox Church.
Join us soon in person.
Just Google St. Vladimir Ann Arbor.
On our website, you will find our full schedule of services.
And a lot more.
Find us on Facebook.
Or on Vkontakte. Yeah.
Or follow us on Twitter.
Subscribe to our YouTube channel.
But most importantly,
please know that you are always welcome at St. Vladimir's.
Enjoy this audio presentation of St. Vladimir's Church, and please join us in person soon.
Unfortunately, Jack Mitchell had to leave. He was going to talk a little bit about his family. I'll start by saying that both of my grandparents were serving in World War II in the European theater. So how about a show of hands, who has family that was serving in World War II? Let's do it. So everybody, basically everybody, which makes perfect sense. Which makes perfect sense because, wait, I can't be in both places. If I stand here, I make them feel guilty for talking, but then I can't be there too. So, I don't know why everybody is so excited today, but now I'm excited because everybody is so excited. But we can't have a conversation if we have six other conversations going on. All right? So, if we could be attentive just for a few minutes. I don't think this is going to be one of these times when we can keep your attention for 30 minutes, or even for 30 seconds for that matter. If we could be attentive just for this time, I think that would be really great. So, I asked Constantine to begin. Трудно понимает английский язык. Okay. Есть три человека тут, английский говорящий. То есть, может быть, это возможно перевести?
Да, это есть. Oh, so they can talk the whole time?
No, but. So it's hard for Anatoly Alexeyevich to understand English. So between the three gentlemen there that speak English and Russian, both they will translate for me.
Yes, okay.
Oh my God. Okay, that's all set. Excellent. So I asked Konstantin Yevgenievich to start this program, and really against his will, he is going to do that. So Konstantin Yevgenievich, if you could say a few words about your experience in World War II. We can't have any World War I experience, they're all gone. And this was the 70th anniversary this year of World War II. If we wait five more years, they'll also be all gone. Seriously, I'm yelling. So if we wait five more years, they'll be all gone. So we can't wait, we need to do it now. So without further ado, we'll have Konstantin speak a little bit about his experience, and then we'll have a few other people speak as well.
Well, I was born in 1938, March. So when the war started, I was about 3 years and a couple of months. At this time, usually there is no stream of memory in kids, you know. Rather, they have some fragmented pieces of events which, for some reason, they remember. They sometimes not even connected to each other and occurred in different times. But anyway, so what I would like to tell you about the beginning of war. For our family and for the siege of Leningrad, where we were with my mother, and was actually some fragments of my memory and some materials which I knew from memoirs which my mother wrote. And she precisely, very meticulously, wrote about these days of siege. I would like to make the whole story short. So, my father graduated this year, at 41, graduated the military academy. And my mother was a nurse. So obviously, when the war started, he was immediately drafted. And she also was obliged to stay at least in the city for some time before the, you know, drafted. So nobody knew what will happen. But on the other hand, the head of the city encouraged those people who are retired and those mothers who has children to leave the city. And it was easy. At that time, it was easy to leave the city. Germans approached pretty fast, and there were a couple of incidents where the trains with kids and those who followed them were sent into direction of approaching German armies. And these people completely disappeared. Nobody even knows what was the fate of them. But they are almost all dead, that's obvious. So after rumors, or not rumors, I don't know how it was spread in the city, mother decided I will not go nowhere. By the way, the father is in the Leningrad's front, so why should we leave? Okay. We stayed for a while, and then next step, those mothers who have two children can go, and with one children should stay if they are, of course, working on the defense or in the medicine. So it become difficult to leave, and anyway, this way we were actually trapped in the city. Till September 9th, from June, Germans didn't touch the city. There was no one plane even go around. What they did, they of course tried to surround the city. So they crushed and bombed railway stations around the cities to demonstrate and interrupt supplies. But the city was like in a normal, civil life. Nothing happened except that people knew that there is a war. So the first bombardment occurred September 9th. It's an Italian day.
September 8th.
September 8th, Italian day. And that was right during the daytime. Which is quite rare for bombardments for Germans, unless it is a very strategically important position, because the losses are big. You know, they try to bomb cities at nights, mostly. So anyway, it was just to the middle of the day, and why? Because there was around the city, there was a squad.
Warehouses
with a lot of food accumulated for the city, and there was an idea the city may stay for about 2 years at least with this food. So what Germans did, they came during the daytime to spot the place precisely, and they bombed it. And during one day, everything was ruined, burned to ashes, and the Leningrad stayed without food. I mean, without supply, which, of course, they tried to bring it still, but the major thing disappeared. This was a first catastrophe. And the same day, same night, there was a first night bombardment, and it was the beginning of the bombing of the Leningrad. On the, with the German meticulous, timing, okay? Every night, at 8 o'clock p.m. till 6 a.m. or 7 a.m., I can't remember exactly, with the about 20 minutes or so between the waves every night. Should be sure that they will appear here. You can check your watch on them. That's a German way of doing things. Anyway, the first bombardment occurred, nobody expected it. And the place we lived at this time was near the headquarters of anti-aircraft defense. And Germans probably they knew about it, that there is a headquarters out there. And on the other hand, our guys put all of these anti-aircraft guns on the roofs around the buildings. So the hell started there, really. It was the worst, I would say, part of the city as compared to the rest. And the rest, they just dropped bombs randomly. Here, they had a goal. Anyway, they hit a couple of buildings right near ours, and our building was shaken. And more interesting, the building had no shelter, so everyone stood either on the stairs or get under the bed. People become crazy with this, you know, especially if it's the first time for you. So the good outcome of this bombardment was this, that the next morning my mother grabbed me and ran to the church and baptized me. Period. Enough is enough, she said. After all of this, gradually but steadily it got worse and worse and worse. There was no food at all. What they gave, you probably read in the books that they send up with the 125 grams of bread per person per day. And it's bread, hardly to call it bread, because there was half of God knows what in there. So people started dying, and to make it even shorter, this story, during this winter, our family lost 4 people who died from the hunger. And there was no, those who were alive, they had no strength to carry these bodies to the cemetery. The bodies laid on the streets, bodies laid on in the apartments, on their own beds. You know, everywhere. I remember, right on the stairs when we need to leave the house, 3 or 4 stairs, there was a body laying down. No one even has enough strength to move it. So people are trying to go around or step over or whatever. It was covered with the snow because there was no windows, of course, left in the doors. And he laid there for I don't know how long. I remember that we walked all the time. This was like another step, you know. They start. You should imagine the big city like Detroit, for example, not Detroit, more big brick buildings, which stays without electricity, which stays without water supply, the sewage is not working, nothing. Can you imagine what will happen? What will happen with these people who are sitting in these apartments? So there was a terrible winter when the frost got to minus 40 Celsius, and all of these old fashioned buildings, which has that thick outer walls from brick. They become frozen. All these stones become frozen. There is no way to make your room inside to make it warmer, because it's all just dissipates on this heat. So people died from cold too, especially they have nothing to eat. Well, only in the spring of 42, they started collecting these bodies around the city. There were special places arranged, which they put a very tall fences, so nobody can see what's going on there. It's open on one side and open on another side. Okay? The tracks filled with bodies came in, down there, and just packed them. And they left to another gate. This way they collected them in the city, and at the same time they started digging this huge graves in the Piskaryovskoye Kladbishche, which is a memorial right now is a memorial place where all of this died during the siege were buried. And actually there is a huge mound, and the only one sign is 1941, 1942. Okay. So all of these people, what are their names, who they were, just 1941, they all died there. This is it. So one way or another, the siege, the most difficult time of the siege was to the summer of 1942. After that, become a little bit, you know, easier, I would say, although it's a wrong statement, maybe. But people stopped dying like this, crazy, you know, on the street. That's what they describe. If somebody is walking, boom, you fell down. Period. And the rest of the people are continuing to walk, because if they will stop and will try to lift him, he will fall down himself. Period. That was the life. And in the summer of 42, when eventually I started dying, my mother was allowed, another good man, allowed to be in the city. And they put us to this barge. Ship? No, that's not a ship.
Huge carrier,
right. The other way, through the Lake of Ladoga, to go to the place where the Russian army was. Otherwise, the city was surrounded. And we were lucky that day, exactly, was a very cloudy day and was a rain. Because German planes meticulously sink these things almost everyone, 80%, more than 80%. They sink them one by one on this short trip, about several hours, in the water. They have no defense, no guns, nothing, just all of these civilians were packed in. All right, anyway, and then that was the end of this story. The rest, we get to Siberia and then get back, and many other stories, but about the siege, that's what I wanted to say. What else interesting here? Well, that's all.
Thank you, Konstantin.
Thank you. Thank you.
There are others who want to speak, I think. Anatoly Alexeyevich хочет разговаривать что.
Good. Good to see you. Good to see you.
Jana, his daughter Jana will translate for him.
Всех людей всего мира. И вот потому что в этих войнах погибают мирные жители, дети, старики.
It's hard to talk about World War II. And in general, wars. Wars, no matter the size, big or small, they are all terrible.
Но самая страшная война за все существование человечества, это, конечно, была Вторая мировая война 1941-45 годов.
The wars are terrible because civilians, innocent people die, children, elderly, those who cannot take care of themselves. But the worst war of all time was the World War II. And for us in the former Soviet Union area, people living 1941-1945,
которая унесла многие-многие миллионы жителей, как мирных, так и военных. Около 50-60 миллионов человек погибло в этой мировой войне.
That war took away lives of 50 or 60 million people total.
И только Советский Союз и Россия в том числе понесла потери почти около 30 миллионов человек.
Former Soviet Union and Russia, as part of it, lost close to 30 million people.
И, конечно, эта война затронула многие семьи, как Советского Союза, так и европейских стран. Ну и в том, естественно, в том числе и мою семью.
Many families were affected by this war, both in the Soviet Union and in Europe, and you wouldn't find a single family that was not affected by the war in among the Soviet people, and my family was one of them.
В чем это заключалось? В нашей семье было 8 детей.
Our family had 8 children.
6 братьев и 2 сестры.
Six brothers and 2 sisters.
Так вот, из этой семьи нашей, два брата моих погибли в эту во Вторую мировую войну.
Two of my brothers died in that war.
Первый брат 19-го года рождения, офицер, первые дни войны оказался на передовой.
One brother, he was born in 1919. He was an officer, and in the first days of the war, he was at the front lines.
Мы в то время жили в городе Днепродзержинске, Днепропетровской области, это на Украине.
We lived in Ukraine at that time, in Dnipropetrovsk region, the city called Днепродзержинск.
И вот брат в первые дни войны, буквально первую неделю, получил ранение и приехал, еще немцы не дошли до Днепра. И он, когда вернулся, приехал на лечение и говорит: мама, вот как мне мать рассказывала, мама, что, говорит, там творится, говорит, на этом фронте. Говорит, я не знаю, останусь я жив или нет. Ну пусть я останусь, может быть, без руки, без ноги, но чтобы я остался жив. После того, как его вылечили, через месяц он опять ушел туда, и буквально через месяц мы получили извещение о том, что он пропал без вести.
So the brother was injured in the first days of the war, and he was sent back for treatment, still in Ukraine. The Germans hadn't reached our town yet, which was on the eastern side of Ukraine. And he came back with the injury, and his mom, my dad's mom, was recalling that he was telling her, "Mom, it is horrible. It is terrible what's happening there. And I don't know if I will stay alive. I wish that even if without an arm or a leg, but I do come back." And after his treatment of the injury, he was sent back to the front lines, and a month later, a note came that he was killed.
Второй брат с первого дня войны, офицер, был командиром отряда разведчиков. И в 44-м, с первого дня по 44-й год под городом Будапештом попали они, разведчики, отряд попал в засаду к бандеровцам, где он получил страшное ранение и остался без левой ноги.
There was one more brother who participated in the war. He was an officer and he was a leader of military scout group, and he was leading that group from 1941 to 44. And in 44, was close to Budapest that his group was sieged by Bandera followers, and he was injured terribly, and he ended up without a leg.
Третий брат в 43-м году, ему было всего 16 лет, он прямо сбежал сам на фронт и попал на Ленинградский фронт, и через месяц мы получили опять, мать получила извещение о том, что он пропал без вести на Ленинградском фронте.
The third brother, one of the two who did not come back from the war, he was 16 when affected by what was happening. 16 years old in 1943, he was 16 and he ran away to the front to fight. And he ended up at the Leningrad front, and the parents got a note that he was missing in action.
И он прислал одно единственное письмо, треугольничек. Через месяц и пишет, маме все время обращался, мама, ну и папа, ну и говорит, сейчас у меня, говорит, в руках, почему-то указал, остался, пишет, что у меня в руках ручной пулемет и автомат, почему-то два. И мы, говорит, идем в атаку. Все, после этого мы его не видели.
There was one letter that he sent from the front, and it came as a triangle. For some reason, they were sending letters as triangles, folded up. There was no envelopes, though they folded. Some those who didn't have envelopes, they would fold their letters as triangles, and so he was writing to mom, mainly addressing it to mom. Mom, right now I'm holding a handgun. And a machine gun, and we're about to go into an attack. That was the last we heard from him.
Ну еще один брат. Впоследствии он стал полковником после войны, но в конце 45-го года он попал тоже под атаку, и Александр в 45-м году. Ну это долгая история, можно говорить, да. Это до войны еще, ну, во время войны, в начале войны. И вот в 45-м году он горел в танке, и кое-как, каким-то чудом остался жив и стал инвалидом.
So the another brother, he was, he also was in the war. And he, in 1945, he was burning inside a tank, and somehow, through some miracle, he was alive.
Так что вот эти четыре практически потери, их уже сейчас и этих двух нет живых. Это для нашей семьи была большая трагедия.
So the two brothers were killed in the war, and the other two brothers were injured in the war, and they are both passed away now, and it was a big hit for our family.
Ну и несколько слов я скажу о себе. О том, что мне было 4 годика, когда немцы подошли к Днепродзержинску, к Днепру. Нас эвакуировали в город Сталинград. Почему в Сталинград? Потому что отец мой работал на Днепродзержинском металлургическом заводе, а в Сталинграде тоже завод «Красный Октябрь», туда всех эвакуировали, туда специалистов на Сталинград. И вот нас туда перевозили.
So when the war started in 1941 in Ukraine, our family was evacuated by train to Stalingrad. The reason being, my father worked at a metalworking factory. Stalingrad had a similar factory at the time there, and so all the workers, all the specialists who could do that kind of work were sent to a similar factory in a different town, the town being Stalingrad. So he remembers the evacuation.
Поскольку мне
было,
поскольку 4 годика было, я не помню того, тех страшных бомбежек, которые сопровождали нас до Сталинграда из Днепродзержинска. А вот когда уже немцы подошли к Сталинграду в 1942 году, мы второй раз уже нас эвакуировали. Мне уже было 5 годиков, и я как сейчас помню. Вот как сейчас моему внуку Данилке 5 лет, вот я такой же был. И как нас на всех воздушных плавучих средствах переправляли через Волгу, а в это время немецкие самолеты бомбили, стреляли по этим лодкам, кто там плыл. Кто выжил, кто утонул, у нас Бог миловал, мы на той стороне, на левом берегу Волги оказались.
I don't remember the evacuation from Ukraine to Stalingrad because I was 4 years old, but the next evacuation from Stalingrad when the Nazis came up to Volga River, I do remember I was like my grandson, 5 years old, and we were being transported on the water crafts through across the river, across Volga, and I remember they were bombing from the air, bombing these vessels, and I remember that some people did drown, and we were spared. Lord spared our lives, and we ended up on the other side of the river, on the left bank.
А на том берегу нас ждали поезда, вагоны, двухосные вагончики такие были, которых вы перевозили скот в свое время, лошадей, коров. Вот в этих вагончиках нас туда поселили, там ни лавочек, ничего нету. Кто что взял, у кого какие узлы были, кто просто никто в одеяло, кто что успел взял, и туда, значит, в эти вагончики нас.
On the other side of the river, there were train cars waiting for us. They only had two axes. They were very simple train cars that were used for mainly for livestock, for transporting livestock. So inside those cars, there was nothing. It was just empty boxes, empty metal boxes, and those people who had anything with them. Whatever they were able to grab when they were being evacuated, that's all they had. You were to sit on nothing. And so we were shoved into those cars for our lives, and off we went.
Вот в этих этот поезд идет вдоль Волги, а летят самолеты, налет идет, свист бомб, поезд останавливается. И все выбегают, я как сейчас помню, выбегают из этих вагончиков, а кругом поле, слева, справа, все в поле разбегаются. Вот кто куда, как прятаться, кто где может спрятаться, кто под куст, кто под что-то. И бомбит, бомбит, бомбит. Все отбомбили, и начинает народ собираться. И слезы. У кого матери нет, у кого сестры нет, у кого, ну, в общем... У каждой семьи практически кого-то не было. А надо двигаться дальше к поезду. Он долго, слава богу, поезд не разбомбили. И все собираются, даже не могут попрощаться со своими родными, которые остались в поле, вынуждены двигаться дальше. И поехали. И опять бомбежка. Как только, значит, долетают, опять все разбегаются. Я как сейчас помню, мать меня взяла, маленький был, и вот так накрыла собою. И вот, а рядом мужчина лежал, как мать потом рассказывает. Лежит мужчина, и мать с этого места сдвинулась, а мужчина на ее место лег. В это время бомбежка и осколком убивает этого мужчину.
So as we were traveling in those cars, they would go, the train would go along the Volga River, and the fascist planes would hover over and start bombing. They had a supply of bombs, and until they were out, they would just keep on bombing the train. As soon as that started, the train would stop in order to not be a live aim for them, would let the people who were inside the train run out. So the train stops, people run out into the fields, right and left, and whatever they can hide under, little bushes, trees here and there, and nothing. People just run out so that they're not one target. And they just lay down. The bombing goes on until they're out of bombs. Then it's over. As soon as they go away, the planes go away, the people start collecting back to the train. And it's tears. It's tears and screaming and crying. Somebody lost their mother, somebody lost their child, somebody lost their sister. There was not a single family on the train that didn't lose somebody along the way. And you can imagine the train, luckily, was spared. It didn't get bombed. So people are having to rush back to the train in order to continue. But their loved ones are staying behind. The killed ones are staying in the fields, and they cannot even say proper goodbye to them. So they either have to stay and try to bury them and say goodbye, or they have to run back to the train to continue their journey for their lives. It was terrible. So they would get back on the train and go on. And sometime later, another bombing, similar thing. Planes over, train stops, people run out, same thing happens over again. He says, he remembers that, and he was remembering, like his mom was telling him, they were down on the ground, he's 5 years old, mom put him down, covered him with her own body, and then something just told her to move over, for whatever reason. So she moves over with him, and a man who was laying next to her moved into her spot. Bombing happens, and a small piece from the bomb falls into that spot where mom had laid, where the man did. So the man is dead.
По-видимому, Господь Бог нас вел и спасал нас, потому что мать у меня была у нас, хоть и малограмотная, но она была очень глубоко верующая. У нее все время была иконка, она так ее и привезла. С начала эвакуации все время держала иконку при себе, и она у нас так и была до самой ее смерти. Эта иконка сохранилась там, в Челябинске, куда нас потом привезли. Видимо, так Господь Бог распорядился, и Он нас вел и, как говорится, спасал.
So, we were, can't say lucky, I guess we were just spared by the Lord, because my mom, even though she was uneducated, she only had 4 years of schooling, she was very, very deeply religious. She was a very strong believer. And she, among few things that she grabbed when we were originally evacuated, she took an icon and she always kept it with her. And we had it up until her passing away, which happened in Chelyabinsk, their final destination of all the evacuations. She always was praying, and it must have been that through her prayers, the Lord has spared us on those journeys.
Ну, таким образом мы оказались в Челябинске. Почему? Потому что там в 1942 году началось строительство Челябинского трубопрокатного завода. И там нужны были специалисты, как с металлургического завода, так и с других заводов. Таким образом мы вот оказались там в Челябинске. И я уже, как сейчас помню, уже там в школу пошел, уже позже в институт. А вот когда... когда немцев разбили под Сталинградом, когда их уже под Курском, очень было много военнопленных немцев. Они по разным регионам их рассылали. И в Челябинске прямо колоннами вели, значит, их немецких солдат. И мы маленькие мальчики, вот мне было уже там 6-7 лет, вот рядом бежали рядом с этими колоннами, бежали вот такими кулачками, сжимали и махали им вот так вот кулаками, своими маленькими кулачками этим немцам, фашистам, которые нас бомбили. И бомбили вообще не только нас, но и всю нашу страну и Европу.
So, we ended up in Chelyabinsk because it was decided that there would be a factory built that was building pipes. And so people with metal working experience like my father were needed there, and they were specialists of that sort were being sent to Chelyabinsk to start factories there. And this was where I went to school, went to college, and got married. That was the town that became mine. And he says, I remember that as the Nazis were being pushed away and they were taken over on the Soviet territory, the prisoners were sent to in groups in different regions of Russia and the former Soviet Union, and among those was the town of Chelyabinsk. And he remembers that as the columns of those rows and columns of those prisoners were going through town, the boys, the little boys, the 6-7 year olds would run along and shake their fists at them.
Так что я хоть и не был участником Сталинградской битвы, но Сталинградского пороха я понюхал.
I haven't, even though I haven't been the member, the soldier in the Stalingrad battle, I did the smell the gunpowder.
Ну и когда в 45-м году война закончилась, конечно, мы все ликовали. Мне уже было сколько? 8 годиков. Мы уже все понимали, мы очень радовались. С одной стороны, с другой стороны, траур был по погибшим. Но я должен сказать в заключение, что слава Богу, что у нас еще остались ветераны после этой войны. Ветераны Великой Отечественной войны, ветераны других войн, которые в Европе, европейцы, у американцев много ветеранов, которые в этой же войне участвовали, в других войнах, в войне, во Второй мировой войне. И мы всегда должны помнить о погибших войнах. И, конечно, с благодарностью должны всегда помнить и отдавать должное всем оставшимся живым ветеранам. Всех стран,
so
скажем.
When the World War II ended for us on May 9th in 1945, I was already 8 years old and I was old enough to understand. And it was a joyous, it was an amazing rejoicing over the victory. And at the same time, it was mourning of those who died. And I have to say that I am glad that we still have veterans remaining alive, and we're glad that we can hear from them. And I know that there are soldiers, veterans on the American side also who participated in that war and other wars. And we have to remember those who passed away, who died, and we have to thank them, and we have to thank those who are still alive for the freedom that we have.
Спасибо за внимание.
Thank you.
So actually, that might be a good place for us to end, unless there's someone else who wants to speak, because we are going to plant some bushes around what will be a future memorial for all Orthodox soldiers and those who have died in the wars. Did I see that somebody else wants to say something? A long trip. Abin Serafim, you would like to say something? You have to come up here though. We can't, the camera only points this way. And then when Abin Serafim has spoken, then we will go outside and we will plant the bushes around what will be our future memorial in our parish for those soldiers who have died in all of the wars and all of the people who died in the wars also.
My speech will be of memory of my father. He was killed during this war when he was 29 years old. So I was living in a very small town, 5,000 population, in very different area of Russia, near the North Ocean, in the tundra, where the Eskimo people live. Small town has airport, 5,000 people, and maybe 2,000 kilometers away, no other small town or airport or villages. And I remember a war, I was 3 years old, I was in kindergarten, and I remember that there was bombing, and the trench was dug near the kindergarten, and during the bombing time, we were hidden there. And then after the war, we were playing in this trench. I remember the dirt, they were not so deep, in land, maybe like this, and covered by the boards and a little bit soil. But no one bombed. Fell on the town, on the houses. Fascists bombed usually the airport. Airport was very important because the battle was going on the ocean, North Ocean, White Sea, Kara Sea, Arctic Ocean. Battle between the submarines. And I know my relatives talking evening that some there were shooting, bombing, some people died, but I do not see, I do not hear, just the talk that maybe 70 miles, 100 miles away from the shore there was battle. What I remember that when airport was bombed, our woman, because no man left in town, our woman was going there, and level again the field that airport and aircraft can land it and go. And what else I remember that after war, maybe I was 7, 8 years old, if airplane is coming and I am playing outside, I'm so scared that I'm crying, Douglas is coming, and I'm running house and hide under the bed. But after years, it's my
fear.
My fear is disappeared. And my father was killed. He was young. I almost not remember him. What else I can tell about the war? After war, during the war, what our family were doing? My aunts and my grandma were sewing gloves for the soldiers without these two fingers that they can shoot from their guns. And I remember I was small, but I was placing pairs and then I counted how many pairs. And then I wrapped this, and everybody was sent to the front. Then about the letters, there are no paper, so no glue. So the letters to the front were written, and the piece of the paper was made before during the transportation. And then there was in this small town, Tundra, and Eskimo people living. And Eskimo people usually have a lot of deer. A lot of deer, and they are hunters. And they work together, and it calls collective farm of the deer, thousands of head. And before the war, it was very rich, milliardaire in rubles of the collective farm. And they bought escadrilla, как escadrilla?
Squadron.
Unit. Squadron.
Squadron of aircrafts. They bought on their own money and sent to the front. And we were so proud that somehow we can help the people who fight there on the battles. And the last point about the Constantine father. His father was fighting in Leningrad front. And one time maybe we are living in Vienna probably, and he told us this story. He was in artillery. And somehow they were out from the from the shells, and a lot of the artillery was destroyed. But the Germans, fascists, they are coming, continue to bomb. So to show them that they have artillery, they built the artillery from the wood. From the wood. And placed there. And one day the fascists coming and start to bomb by bombs done from wood.
Thank you, Albina Serafini.
Thank you for listening to this audio production of St. Vladimir Orthodox Church in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Please join us in person soon. To learn more about our parish, please visit our website, stva2.org. That's S as in Sam, T as in Tom, V as in Victor, A as in Apple, the number 2.org. See you soon at St. Vladimir's.